Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Karen Tynan, and I'm an attorney here in Sacramento, California. Here with me today is Jill Schubert. We're discussing California leaves today, a broad overview for human resource professionals, business owners, and managers. So, Jill, let's start with the differentiations between federal leaves for employees and the California leaves so that we can see where the California employers have different duties.
Yeah, so definitely in California, there are a lot more types of leave and they tend to be more expansive, apply more broadly, that kind of thing. Under federal law, it's mostly FMLA. You might also have some obligations under the ADA or some obligations arising under USERRA. In California, the CFRA is, you know, kind of the equivalent to the FMLA, but it's a little more broad in some respects. But then California also just has a laundry list of little, very specific, situation-specific types of leave that can kick in. And they're too lengthy to list right here. But yeah, if your employee comes to you at some point and says that they're entitled to some strange type of leave, don't just assume that they're wrong in California.
Right, exactly. So let's just, to give people the mindset of if their place of business has to comply, how many employees are employers going to have for, let's say, for example, FMLA to apply?
Yeah, so the FMLA, it's 50 employees within a 75-mile area. CFRA typically kicks in at that point as well, but may also kick in at a lower level, sometimes at 25 employees. And then there's some types of leave in California that kick in with just 5 employees. So in California, even the smaller employers have some pretty big obligations.
Right. And I know for you and I, many times I have a spreadsheet that I have to reference to see the interplay and the number of employees and the employer duties. So you mentioned CFRA, the California Family Rights Act. Let's talk about those similarities and the differences with FMLA. Can you take us there?
Yeah. So for the most part, they function pretty similarly. The CFRA applies to registered domestic partners, which is one key difference from the FMLA. And then actually, there are a few spots where the FMLA has some obligations that don't arise under the CFRA. That includes the qualifying exigency for family members of deployed armed services members. And then the FMLA also can provide up to 26 weeks of leave for an employee who's caring for an ill or injured service member. On the other end, CFRA can have some additional obligations for baby bonding leave, and there are additional laws in California that provide for more pregnancy leave. So a lot of times CFRA and FMLA will track one another, but there are definitely times where they diverge.
Right, and that's an important distinction. And you mentioned California pregnancy disability. So I think it's probably an area where we get a ton of questions. So take us through kind of the basics of pregnancy disability leave and how employers can comply and understand what they need to do.
Yeah. So in California, the Fair Employment and Housing Act provides for pregnancy disability leave. That's up to 4 months. That is specifically for the pregnant member of the family. And that can run concurrently with FMLA. But after pregnancy disability leave has run, then employees are also eligible for baby bonding leave under the CFRA. And then you also always have to remember that you might have reasonable accommodation obligations over and above any protected leave. So in California, there can be up to 7 months of protected leave for a pregnancy, and then you may have some additional reasonable accommodation options that kick in.
And we have another podcast just on pregnancy disability leave where we'll get into intermittent time off and lots of other interesting questions that we get. So let's talk about CFRA. So in California, how do leaves affect seniority when taking time away from the workplace?
So you can't take away an employee's seniority at any point. So if an employee has a certain amount of seniority before they start taking leave, you can't ever subtract from that. You are not necessarily required to continue giving them, you know, service years credits or things like that during a period of unpaid leave. So in that sense, you know, if you have two employees who maybe started a month apart and one takes a couple months of leave, that employee who started a month later might leapfrog them in terms of seniority. But it also depends on, you know, how you treat seniority in other contexts. So, you know, if you kind of have a typical policy of continuing seniority regardless of time away from work, you know, you want to make sure that you're applying those types of policies evenly regardless of the reasons for leave or
Right. And I see that too when people will talk about, oh, well, when someone's off on CFRA, but you know, how am I treating their benefits and seniority and all these aspects? And I absolutely agree with you that you can't have all these variations in how you're treating all these different employees with regard to seniority or their medical benefits and all that. Remember, you need consistency. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
So when people are going to miss work, there's typically medical certification that plays a role in that. Let's talk about some of the best practices with regard to the medical certification for some of, for these leaves.
Yeah. So one of the things that I am a big fan of is having some kind of form where you have the employee's job description, a list of the essential functions of their position, and then like, you know, maybe kind of check the box options for lifting restrictions, you know, breaks, that type of thing. Here in the employment law context and for HR people, you know, we draw a distinction between work restrictions and accommodations. You know, there's a difference between what tasks can't you do or, you know, what breaks do you need? What lifting restrictions do you have? And accommodations like, you know, working from home or light duty or those kind of more vague terms where you're not really sure what the reason for it is. And, you know, physicians, they've got 10 minutes to see a patient, 15 minutes, something like that. They're not going to write you a novel in the doctor's note. So providing them a form where they can kind of check off the boxes and that are just jogging, you know, their memory as far as what kind of things are important to an employer, as a practical matter, that seems to work well a lot of the time. That gets you a little bit better information about what are the actual work restrictions versus, you know, what's just sort of a preconceived accommodation that may not work for the employer very well. And honestly, that may not even be dealing with the employee's restrictions necessarily. So that's one thing that just I've heard from clients seems to work well is to kind of be a little proactive about providing those forms to the employee and hopefully getting them back from the doctor. You know, another thing is just as part of the interactive process, you know, really engage with employees about, you know, what are you expecting to need? So when you do get that doctor's note that, you know, so-and-so needs time off or, you know, so-and-so needs more breaks, talk to the employee about what are they expecting? Like, can we agree that, you know, we're going to interpret this as you need 2 20-minute breaks a day instead of 2 10-minute or, you know, 4 10-minute or, you know, something like that. But try to you know, get everyone on the same page about, okay, you know, this is the expectation. This is how we think it's going to play out. And as the employer, that's completely reasonable. You know, you need to be able to plan for your workforce. You've got to make sure you've got the right number of employees scheduled, depending on what's going on. Yeah.
I like that. I really do prefer the employer's form, and it's able to be used, that doctor form, in the interactive process where you do go back and forth and talk about what the employee needs and how the business can make it work. So sometimes I'll see a term in a doctor's note, or you'll see employees say, hey, I need some sick leave. And that's kind of a old term. So what do you advise employers, California employers, as far as sick leave policy and procedures?
So California has very specific requirements for mandatory sick leave. You are required as an employer to provide your employees with at least 24 hours of sick leave per year, or 1 hour of leave for every 30 hours worked. One of the things that is very particular about California's sick leave is that the Department of Industrial Relations has guidance out there that says that asking for a doctor's note to justify the need for sick leave can discourage employees from using sick leave and be seen as retaliatory. If your employee has available sick leave, don't ask for a note, just, you know, allow them to use it. It's one of those things that, you know, I think for people outside of California, it seems,
right,
you know, counter to common sense. But and then for employers who have occurrence policies, those are super common, especially in, you know, hospitality and retail industries, you know, to be sure that you're not ever awarding occurrences for sick leave when, right, when an employee has available sick leave.
I agree with that policy. And for people who need a little direction, to go online and look at the Department of Industrial Relations website. Of course, it's dir.ca.gov. And you can get more information about California's mandatory sick leave. Well, let me ask you this. Another question that you and I've talked about that we get sometimes from employers is about military spouses. So can you tell us a little bit about the best practices for California employers with regard to military spouses?
Yeah, so this is one of those specific types of leave that is available in California. So for employees who work at least 20 hours a week, they are entitled to up to 10 days of unpaid leave while their service member spouse is on leave. This one applies to employers with at least 25 employees. One of the things where, you know, it's required, but maybe don't enforce it so strictly, is that the employee is supposed to give the employer notice within 2 days of receiving their spouse's leave notice.
Yeah, don't be nitpicky, right?
Yeah. There's nothing that says an employer can't, you know, be a little more understanding with that requirement. And, you know, it's one where I feel like 2 days is just, it's a short timeline. So, you know, be understanding if your employee seems like they're being responsible.
I agree. And with all these different types of leaves that we've talked about, one area where I see employers get into a little trouble or have some gaps has to do with the record keeping that's related to all these leaves. So what are some of the best practices for human resources professionals or managers about the documentation of these leaves?
Anytime you've had discussions with an employee, whether it's about leave, about reasonable accommodation, send a follow-up letter, email, something that is, you know, lays out, these are our expectations, this is what we think you're planning to do, and these are the dates and all of that. It just helps that, you know, everybody has a written record of it. if there was some misunderstanding, it's a good early opportunity to clear that up. And they don't need to be super legalistic. I'm not saying that you need to send out a 4-page single space notice, you know, but even just an email that says, hey, you know, based on our conversation today, I understand you're going to take FMLA leave from this date to this date. You know, if you guys have talked about how insurance is going to get paid for, whatever, include that. But just, you know, restate it. So make sure everyone's on the same page. And don't just assume after a back and forth exchange of emails that everyone is on the same page. Because so often, especially 3-4 weeks down the road, you know, everybody's memory has waned a little. Yeah. And, you know, people now remember different things than maybe even what they did at the time. So I'm a big fan of recap emails and recap letters. I also, for purposes of leaves, whether you use like an Excel spreadsheet or something like that, I really like the little just narrative notes included in there. You know, it can be really hard. We talk about, you know, dry transcripts as attorneys. It's the same thing. You see a dry spreadsheet and it's like, oh, why did, you know, why did we write that there? Why did we put that date in there? Right. You know, so keeping your narrative notes as you go along as well, I think is really helpful for, you know, somebody who's looking back 6 months later, trying to figure out, you know, why did we say this is the start date? Or why did we say that? Or
right. Memorializing phone calls too, because sometimes, especially if it's a person's ill or they're taking care of a family member, you may just get a quick note or a call and it is fleeting. And I really like your point about making very good notes about when notifications go back and forth, what you've talked about with regard to benefits. Sometimes people will be off on leave and then suddenly they're wondering about, well, wait a second, you know, what do I do about my payment for insurance or my vision plan or how does this work? So I like very good note taking around different leaves. And the other part is sometimes leaves are getting stacked, right? So someone's taken off a particular leave, let's just say CFRA, and then now they say, you know what, I'm going to need to take some pregnancy disability leave. Well, okay, now you got to really keep good track of the different leaves, what dates are what, and how you're handling all of it. Or if someone is taking some intermittent leave, right? Yeah. How are you tracking those days? Is it every Friday that they take off for chemo? Is it that pregnant person has to come in late because of morning sickness? I think those notes are very helpful, Jill.
Absolutely. Another good point to always make is, you know, you've got those stacking leaves, but also remember that your employee may be dealing with state disability insurance or, you know, paid family leave. They may be getting compensated from these state or federal programs. And a lot of times it's hard for them to understand sort of the difference between their protected leaves that apply in the employment context and these paid leaves that they're getting. And so there's a lot of potential for confusion about, you know, well, I got approved for my paid family leave as far as income reimbursement from the state. And then when we're talking about, you know, baby bonding leave, they're not necessarily understanding that those two are not the same thing. So another good reason to always be recapping and laying those kinds of things out in emails or letters.
Right. And it's not confusion out of ignorance. I'd be confused by it all. You know, if someone's applied for state disability while they're off and then they're getting these notices in the mail, I think HR can be very helpful in that. So we have other podcasts on pregnancy disability leave that'll dive deeper into that. We appreciate you listening. We also have a great lactation accommodation podcast and sexual harassment training podcast. So listen for more from Jill and Karen in Sacramento.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.